Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 83 of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all had a pretty darn good week. Hope you enjoyed week two. It was an interesting one. I'll be honest with you, there was a couple of games that caught me off guard, and we'll get into that. And then there was a couple of games where, okay, yeah, we expected this, and this is what happened. So we're going to jump right in to the standout seven. Like every episode and like every standout seven, we're going to start with a little bit of game, little game rather, of the bigger story. So 1A, I guess if you want to keep it properly ordered here, like we do on the show outline, bigger story, the Rams win on the road or the Buccaneers win at home. For those of you that don't remember, the Buccaneers took on the Carolina Panthers and Teddy Bridgewater. In this game, we saw in the beginning of an awful week for injuries everywhere, and we'll run through those as we get into the injury reports when we get into the pick'em portion. But we see in this one, Christian McCaffrey winds up with two scores, but he also winds up with a high ankle sprain. Tom Brady doesn't knock anyone's socks off. 23 for 35, 217, a touch and a pick. Leonard Fournette, 12 carries for a buck 03, the bulk of that on a late carry to ice the game. Didn't really knock anyone's socks off either. Mike Evans, a gutty game here, playing through a hamstring injury, 7 catches for a buck 04. A big one. You know, this team didn't want to go out and start 0-2. It was apparent from the outset, and they didn't do that. But I guess I would have to say is the bigger story comes from the other game, because nobody's expecting Carolina to be great. Most people are not expecting the Bucs to be bad, and they did not play poorly. But the Los Angeles Rams go to Philly, drop quick 14 in the first quarter. We're looking at a halftime score of 21-16, 24-16 going into the fourth, and then they just kind of run away. They win the fourth quarter by 10. Jared Goff, 20 of 27, 267, 3 touchdowns, a solid performance. On the other end, not so much. Carson Wentz, 2 picks. After the game, Doug Peterson getting asked about his quarterback's regression, even though they're both working together for, I believe, the duration of his career at this point, entering his fifth season. There's been some injury-plagued seasons in there, not to mention, you know, putting the cards on the table. This is a guy that was leading the team in that Super Bowl season. He was an MVP candidate, and here we are. This is not the best Rams defense in the world, but that's neither here nor there. Obviously, Miles Sanders comes back in this one. I think he put one on the turf early, but 20 carries for 95. Not a bad game from him. DeSean Jackson chips in some catches. Zach Ertz a little bit. But the big thing is, I mean, you give up 37 to the Rams. Are the Rams really that good? Darrell Henderson, 6.8 yards per carry on the ground. Who? No one has Darrell Henderson on their fantasy team. 3 touchdowns for Tyler Higbee? That can't happen. I'd say this is an offensive failure as much as it is a defensive failure. I know they turned the ball over. I know the offensive line has been porous, at least it was in week one. But the fact of the matter is Philly really this bad? They can't be. And we'll get into that when we talk about the pick'em portion, because this week they've got a little bit of a show-me game. You know, this week the Eagles are playing at home, and they're taking on the Bengals. And the Bengals are not a great team by any stretch of imagination, but the way the Eagles have played, they might have a hard time with Joey B and this Bengals squad. So I'm going to say the bigger story in this one, the Rams. Do I believe in the Rams? Like I said, we'll get into picks later, but I think might be a little bit of circumstance in these wins by the Rams. Might be a little bit of coming out and surprising people. I mean, they beat the Cowboys somehow. That shocked the heck out of me. Zeke didn't play bad in that game. Dak didn't play awful in that game. And it's not like Jared Goff knocked anyone's socks off. But here we are, looking at a 2-0 Rams team for the first time since, well, I think since the Super Bowl season. So 1B, keeping it ordered and organized, like a nice little PowerPoint presentation for you. 1B, bigger story. Chiefs' rough win on the road, or Dallas's rough win at home. And this one's hard. I'd have to say, I feel by default that is Dallas, because Dallas found a way to win this game. And by that, I mean the Falcons found a way to lose. Which is why, if you know me, I'm not really that impressed. But look, I get it. They didn't quit. It's week two. You shouldn't be quitting on games in week two. Like, okay, you by default, you filled the prerequisite for being a decent football team. You don't quit. All right, cool. Like, I hate to break it to you, but in week two, nobody should be quitting in these games because everybody's still in it. This Dallas team got aired the hell out. 39 points from the Atlanta Falcons, and I picked them going in because I thought Atlanta in week one showed me a lot in their fight against Seattle. And we have a late, awful special teams play that cost them, and that's the way I'm looking at it. Look, remember what I said at the end of week one? Detroit lost, but they didn't lose. You know what I mean? Chicago came back, but they know damn well they lost that game because it was a dropped game-winning touchdown. Dallas won this game, but they know damn well they lost that game. That onside kick was nothing special. It was very fluky. They go down and drive. You know, props to them. They get the win. And I'm, like I said, by default, I'd have to say that's the bigger story. But in actuality, I would say that it might be that for some reason, this Charger team led by a backup quarterback that I said from the outset should be a starting quarterback. And trust me, we're going to talk about it again right after number one. We're going to get into it. But led by a backup QB, found a way to have the lead after the first quarter, after the second quarter, after the third quarter, tied going into OT. Obviously, can't be not tied if you're going into OT. They found a way. Led by a guy who didn't know he was going to start, with a running game led by Josh Kelly and Austin Eckler, two good backs, but they're not lead backs on majority of teams, I would say. Keenan Allen chipping in. Hunter Henry showing up for the first time in what I feel like is forever. A pass rush that looked pretty darn good. A secondary that, for the most part, did a decent job until late in the game when the wheels started to come off a little bit. You know, 27 of 47 for Mahomes is not awful, but it's not as good as we've seen him be. You know, 27 out of 47, what are we talking here, 57%? Is that accurate? I don't know if that's accurate. I think it is. Sure, let's go with that. 57%. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, not much on the ground. 10 carries for 38. Tyreek, one big play, really? Kelsey chipping in here and there. Didn't have a bad game. Had a good game. 9 for 90. Not much out of Sammy Watkins. I think the biggest story in this one is, obviously the Chiefs are human, and this happens a lot in divisional matchups. But what it comes down to is the Chargers, with Justin Herbert at the helm, are a pretty good football team. Like I said before, if you remember, and I'll keep bringing it up till I'm blue in the face, I said, assuming they would start Herbert, this team is going to be in the playoff hunt, if not right on the outside looking in. I had them in that last group, you know what I mean? Pats, Steelers, I had the Broncos barely above them. But that's because I figured Drew Lock with his progression would be a little bit better. But Herbert looked pretty darn good for a guy in his first start. We'll get into Herbert in a minute. Final part of number one. Bigger story. The fact that the Lions are just straight up not being competitive, or the fact that the Vikings are straight up not being competitive. Now, in 2 weeks, the Vikings have lost by 17 to the Colts. And they lost by 9 to the Packers, but it's important to note that they scored 24 points in that fourth quarter, and they made up 10 points of that deficit. So they were down 19 with 10 points on the board going into the fourth quarter, and Aaron Rodgers walked down the field on them, 4 touchdowns, wasn't even a close game, wasn't even close to close. Here's the thing about the Lions, and I know you're going to say, Nick, you just praised the Lions, and I did. The Lions were good in week one. They blew that game. They were ahead and they blew that game, and it seems to me like they like to blow leads. And that's a problem. And look, that dates back to last year, and this game's not going to be a Super Bowl contender. Everyone knows that. And they were ahead in this game against the Packers, 14-3. Look at the final score, 42-21. Look, I know the Packers are better than them. I get it. Nobody was expecting the Lions to win this game. But for Aaron Jones to go off for over 200 all-purpose and 3 touchdowns. For the Lions offense to churn out 244 in the passing game. You know what I mean? Leading receivers are a tight end and a running back. Like, where's Marvin Jones? 4 catches for 23. Where's Amendola? 2 catches for 21. Kerryon Johnson in this game. 8 carries for 32 yards. you know, I get it. The Packers are better than you, and the Packers are one of the best teams in the NFC. And we'll talk about them a little bit later. But come on now. Really? The bigger story for me is the Lions, because I have a feeling that this team is going to quit on Matt Patricia very soon, and this will be his last season in Detroit, and rightfully so. The Vikings, I would say, look, if you asked me, perhaps right as they were losing this game, my opinion on them, I would say that for some reason, this Vikings team is awful. And this game, it was Kirk Cousins, 3 interceptions. Dalvin Cook wasn't awful on the ground, but 3 picks, no passing game at all. Is it the absence of Stephon Diggs? He couldn't have meant that much to you because you traded him away. You would have given him a contract, no? I mean, my goodness. It's mind-boggling. Kyle Rudolph, 0 catches. Nice. That's what you want out of your former Pro Bowl tight end. Phil Rivers, 214 yards. He didn't even play a great game. Jonathan Taylor did. 26 carries, 101. Mo Alley Cox was their leading receiver. The tight end. The number 2 or 3 tight end. Come on now, guys. Come on now. This Vikings team is worse than Detroit, but the thing that concerns me, because right now, through 2 weeks, Detroit looks like they're better than Minnesota. But Detroit looks like they quit. Remember how I talked about just a handful of seconds ago? It's week 2, we shouldn't see anyone quitting, shouldn't see things like that. Detroit looked like, in that Packer game, they got out in the lead, they got punched in the mouth after they threw the first punch, and then that's it. They were like, alright, we're down. We're down for the count, no matter what. We're down for the count here. We'll see you in week 3. No bueno. No bueno at all. So number 2, you knew we were going to talk about it early and often. Let's talk about Tyrod Taylor and whatever happened. So Tyrod Taylor apparently dealing with some rib injuries, some rib pain, gets an injection from the team doctor, painkiller, numb it, you know, let him play through it. Tough guy, I respect it. We didn't even hear much about the injury, at least I didn't. And what happens? He gets a punctured lung. A punctured lung from the team's own doctor. Wow. Look, I'm sure stuff like this has happened before. The most famous one of team doctors in relation to a player and misdiagnosis and things like that is obviously talking about the Trent Williams fiasco with the former Washington Redskins, now Washington football team. And everything that happened there, and that was a complete and utter, look, it was well documented. We don't need to go through this again. But it was a, I can't think of a nice word to call it, put it that way. It was a cluster. Fill in the blank. But this is just peculiar. I have never seen this. And then the interesting thing, the reason I want to talk about it is, and call it a little rude, call it a little soon, is there any doubt, if you watch this Chargers team play the Chiefs, so they're playing a harder opponent, less noticed. They played the Bengals the week before. They scored 16 points against the Bengals. Take a look at the stats that game. Tyrod Taylor, 16 of 30 for 208. Production on the ground, once again, from Eckler and Kelly. In the receiving game, I mean, Keenan Allen gets 4 catches. Mike Williams, 4 catches. Hunter Henry, looks like through 2 games he's back to being Hunter Henry at least, which is good news if you're a Charger fan. But they put up 16 against the lowly Bengals, which is interesting. Because obviously the Chargers don't have as much firepower on paper as a team like the Browns, which sounds weird to say. But the Browns go out and drop a 35 spot on them. Nick Chubb plays out of his mind. Odell Beckham even scores a touchdown. First time we've seen him in a minute. You know. And, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is, this team, in a matter of a week, went from scoring 16 on the team that just had the number 1 pick to scoring more points and pushing the defending champions to the brink. Look, and a lot of that has to do with coaching staff, right? It has to do with Anthony Lynn, and you remember, I'm real high on Anthony Lynn. I'm a big fan of him as a head coach, and I think he's done a lot for this franchise in terms of trying to bring them back into being respectable, so to speak. Not that they were ever in the dumps like the Browns. But the bottom line is, with a rookie QB who didn't know he was playing, who goes out and puts up 311 yards, 67% completion percentage, a touchdown and a pick, I mean, did he play perfect? No, of course not. But Justin Herbert played great. And the thing that concerns me, and look, I think this is, I don't want to call shenanigans, I don't want to call BS. You know, I like Anthony Lynn. If he says it, I'll have to take him at his word. But you take a look, Anthony Lynn says, Tyrod right now gives us the best chance to win. CBS Sports reporting, in 47 career starts, Tyrod Taylor has one 300-yard passing game. In one career start, Justin Herbert has a 300-yard passing game. Look, I'm just putting it out there that it's kind of clear to me this team is better with Herbert out there after one game. Look, if he goes out and poops the bed the next couple of games, then I'm sure they'll go back to Tyrod. But the bottom line is the ceiling is much higher on Herbert. And with a team this talented, in a division this challenging, as we see the Raiders off to a good start, it's worth noting that it might be worth giving him a shot. If he goes out, let him take his licks. If you lose some games, you lose some games. Unless you're running Tyrod out there to get the team in a spot where they're not competitive anymore. Because look, Tyrod Taylor in his career is 24-21-1. Win-loss record on a quarterback, be damned. I know, I hear you. He's an average quarterback. Completion percentage in his career, 61%. In Buffalo was 62.6, which is where he spent most of his time as a starter. In Buffalo in 44 games, 51 touchdowns to 16 picks. That's not bad. But a little over a touchdown a game, you know, if you want to factor in, and I can look at his rushing if you want as I peruse down here. I mean, in Buffalo, he ran for 14 touchdowns. Okay, let's call it 65 touchdowns in 44 games. What is that, a 1.5 to 1? So you're looking at a 25-touchdown season? That's not great. That's not bad. I think the big thing he gives them, and like I said before, it's got to be the mobility. You know, he's not a big turnover guy, but he doesn't really, he doesn't do it for me. And you take a look at 15, which is, you know, one of the better years that he has here. 2015, 64% completion percentage almost, 20 touchdowns to 6 picks. I mean, if you talk about the fact that he brings in, you know, a lot during the fact that he can run, his mobility, 568 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns, but 9 fumbles. That was his biggest year for fumbles. For the next year. So I'm not saying he's a big turnover guy. I'm not saying he's not moderately efficient. I'm saying he is what he is. You get what you see. This team is not going to be a playoff contender. This team is not going to be a legitimate threat with Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. He just doesn't perform. And look, I'm not knocking the guy. He could be, and it's poor luck that he wound up in the situation he's in, where, you know, he's just trying to grit through it and be a good team player, and he winds up hurt. But he's 31 years old. He's had a handful of shots in his career. The 3 years in Buffalo, that's really it. I mean, he was your backup last year. He didn't really touch the turf, and that was a year where Phil Rivers was kind of throwing the ball to everybody on the opposing team. So all of a sudden, Tyrod Taylor is your guy. You draft this guy top 10, Justin Herbert, and all of a sudden, you're going to go with it. It doesn't make sense to me. Like I said, if it's a situation where he'll be the starter until they're out of it, and then you go to Herbert for the last 8 games, 6 games, whatever, I guess. But why? Like, look, your team isn't, I don't know, you're not completely out of it. It's week 2. You just put up a really good fight against a team that's a championship caliber team. Clearly you are decent enough to be a playoff contender. Why handicap yourself with a guy in Tyrod Taylor who just doesn't produce to a level that, for a while, we all thought was possible? At least I did. When he was in Buffalo, if you remember, if you were listening to the show, and thank you if you were, I assumed, you know, there's not much weaponry around him. As they start to build the offense around him a little more, maybe it'll get better. And it just never did. And you take a look at what the Bills are now with Josh Allen, and they're more explosive. And look, it's understandable there's more around Josh Allen, and he's got more talent on paper, just on things that are tangible. He's got a stronger arm. He has decent mobility, comparable even to that of Tyrod, and I guess it's a more suitable offense than the one that Tyrod was running, if you want to make that argument. But the fact of the matter is, Tyrod just wasn't able to get it done there, and I don't think he's capable, literally, of leading this team anywhere than to a mediocre season, and to maybe a decent draft pick, but that's about it. That's all I've got. Number three in the standout seven, keeping on young quarterbacks, not as young as I was going to say Gardner Minshew. I'm jumping the gun. Not as young as, obviously, Justin Herbert, but Kyler Murray. Apparently, the Kyler Murray for MVP train is leaving the station. Well, stay in the station. Kyler Murray, 67% completion percentage, pretty darn good. Kyler Murray, 2 touchdowns to 2 picks. Obviously, running the ball, he's already got 3 rushing touchdowns. He's got 158 rushing yards, which is, he is much running at a much higher clip than he was last year. Last year, 93 carries for 544. He's already got 21 carries this year for .158. 3 touchdowns in 2 games compared to 4 touchdowns all of last season. Last year, he was pretty good. We've been through this over and over. I didn't think he was worthy, in my opinion, of the Rookie of the Year. Not that he played poorly. I just didn't think he deserved it. This year, we're already starting to try and give him the MVP. When you have a guy in Seattle, by the way, who just beat the Patriots in primetime, and I'm going to tell you the raw numbers here because they're important. 52 of 63, that's an 83% completion percentage, 9 touchdowns, 1 pick, and you take a look at the interesting part, and I mentioned this last week, and I'm going to keep mentioning it. Through 2 games, he has 8 carries. 8 carries. You do the math here, he's pacing for about 60 carries. Last year, he only had 75. This is a guy, and look, 2014, 118 carries, 900 rushing yards almost. His rookie year, 489. The next year, 539. Since 17, he hasn't topped 400 yards. He's toning down. And that's just the way it is. You know, you take a look, there's a lot of fumbles in there, and maybe that's part of the problem, and he's already got 1 fumble this year. But the fact of the matter is, this is a guy that's becoming an efficient passer in a more pass-oriented offense. And oh, by the way, they're 2-0. And oh, by the way, they've beaten the New England Patriots, which are not as good as they used to be, and I'm the first one to tell you that. But it's more interesting on the resume than beating the Washington football team and beating... Who did the Cardinals play in week one? I don't even remember. Let's see. The Arizona Cardinals in week one played the 49ers, which is good on the resume. You know what? I'll give you that one. But did they beat him because of Kyler? 13 carries for 91. Maybe they did. He was their offense. DeAndre Hopkins, 14 for $1.50. DeAndre Hopkins better than any weapon Russell Wilson has. In totality, Russell Wilson has more weapons. But I would say this. I can't not, through 2 games, and I can't believe we're doing this. Can't believe this is a topic on the show. Through 2 games, I have to tell you to pump your brakes because this guy's got 9 touchdowns and 11 incompletions. That's kind of nuts. That's not going to last. Kyler Murray probably going to throw for 25, 30 touchdowns maybe this season. I hope for his sake he doesn't get sacked 48 times again, although he's already been sacked 5 times through 2 games. Not trying to poo-poo Kyler Murray. Obviously a big win against the 49ers. You know, it's tongue-in-cheek to have this conversation in Week 3, but come on now. Let's pump the brakes all the way. Speaking of pumping the brakes, sadly, number 4 in the standout 7, Minshew Magic. Let's talk about it. And obviously, we were talking about this as they were wrapping up their competitive loss to the Titans in Week 2, and yeah, we're celebrating competitive losses because this team is bad. This Jaguars team is bad. And they're supposed to be bad. You know, from the GM perspective, obviously they didn't try to put out a winner. It's pretty apparent that was not the goal, right? And here they are, competing with the team that won their division last year. Or did the Titans win the division? I don't recall, actually. Team that contended to win their division, let's call it. I don't remember if it was them or the Texans. I think it might have been the Texans. Either way, excuse me. Bash me in the comments wherever you're listening to it or on social media. At Nick Donatic. My name's in the comments. You know who I am. Bash me there. This is a team where, look, Gardner Minshew goes out and throws 2 picks, 3 touchdowns, 30 of 45, 339. On the ground, we see James Robinson, 16 carries for $1.02. Spreading the ball everywhere. 4 catches for Chark, 6 for Keelan Cole, 4 for Chris Conley, 4 for O'Shaughnessy, 3 for Tyler Eifert. Shout out to him for still being in the league, still giving it a go, even though he's battled so many injuries for a guy that was so talented at one point. Speaking of which, we'll give a shout out in here because I don't know if we'll get to it later. I think we will when we do the picks. Shout out to Jordan Reed for bouncing back, a guy, one of my favorite tight ends in the league. I think he had a great upside. He's one of the best receiving tight ends I've ever seen. And here we are. He's in San Francisco, winning culture, winning team. Well, winning culture for a year, but winning franchise, I should say, having left Washington. And, you know, all of a sudden, you're seeing glimmers of the old Jordan Reed. And it's exciting for me. It really is. It's a little sad because, you know, there's so many years lost to injury. But the bottom line is good for him for keeping at it and staying out there. And hopefully for his sake, salvaging some semblance of, you know, what could have been. Anyway, the main point of this is I was going to say there's no way they contend, right? And yeah, of course they don't. But what I really wanted to put this out there was somehow, before they went out and got stomped, and I mean utterly stomped, demolished, destroyed by the Miami Dolphins. And in that game, Minshew 30 of 42, 275. You know, there's no way this team contends. Of course they don't contend. That's what we wrote down in the notes. And, you know, Fitzmagic played a solid game. Nothing insane from him, 18 to 20, which is not bad. 160 yards, not going to knock anyone's socks off. James Robinson had the two touchdowns, you know, only 46 yards on the ground. You know, it is what it is. Better team won. Dolphins better than the Jags. I picked the Jags because of the magic. Obviously, I get caught up in the magic, and that's why we're talking about it right now. But what I wanted to really talk about here is if this team is competitive in enough of these games, they might not get the top pick. Look, on paper, the way they've constructed this team, as I said, and the way they've torn apart this team, looking at guys like Jalen Ramsey getting traded, looking at Yannick Ngakoue getting traded, looking at cutting Leonard Fournette, just outright cutting him for no reason, really. I guess he was unhappy, but okay. Yeah, that's never been worked out before in the history of the NFL. But the fact of the matter is, do they have something here in a Gardner Minshew? And we've had this discussion before. Last year, 21 touchdowns, 6 picks. The guy goes 6-6. That's not bad for a rookie quarterback. 3,300 yards in 12 starts, 14 games played. I mean, he's got a little mobility. He rushed for 344 yards last year. He's already got 60 through two games here. Talking about QB rushing yards a lot, it seems, this episode. Pacing for about 480. Actually, no. Pacing for about 300, rather. You know, I just wonder, is this going to be a guy where if they get a Trevor Lawrence, if they do continue to play poorly, right? Which they should. They're not a great team. They're not going to make the playoffs. I wouldn't suggest that. They're a team that could mess up and win 6 games. You know what I mean? Just to put themselves out of position for a top pick, kind of like the Jets always do, kind of like the Giants have done in the past. Just lose the games, your fans are saying. But no, for pride. Okay. So would there be a market for a guy like Gardner Minshew? I wonder, because he's accomplished more already than Josh Rosen had, and Josh Rosen got run out of Arizona because they got Kyler Murray. Okay, understandable. Kyler Murray, clearly a pretty solid QB thus far. We'll see how he develops. He could be a superstar. Who knows? But for all intents and purposes, it appears that they made the right decision. Then Rosen goes to Miami, and he doesn't really get a shot. And here he is now, kind of a castaway in Tampa, learning behind Tom Brady in just his, what, third year? And I'd say it would be a shame if a guy like Gardner Minshew had that happen. Not that Gardner Minshew is the next Tom Brady, but Gardner Minshew has some swagger to him. He's got some flair, and clearly there's some talent there. You don't go 6-6 in the NFL by accident. Now, look, I'm not saying it hasn't happened before. I haven't seen Brian Hoyer win games. Not saying I didn't see Ryan Fitzpatrick almost go to the playoffs in Buffalo. But I wonder what happens to this kid. And I'd hope, both for the sake of whichever team gets him, because clearly he has some fan appeal, and for his sake that, you know, people look at the fact that, hey, it looks like he can kind of play a little bit. And if he can play a little bit, maybe we should give him a shot. You know, is it a team like the Jets? If Sam Darnold continues to not perform particularly well, because the skill position players around him aren't great and because the offense isn't great, period, whether it be due to injuries, to coaching, or just to, I mean, that's who they are. If they don't get the number one pick, would they consider bringing in a guy like Minshew for a fourth rounder, third rounder? Would Jacksonville hold on to him to keep him as a starter while somebody sits behind him if they do wind up getting a high pick? Would that be preposterous? I don't know. The consensus seems to be Trevor Lawrence will go pretty high, if not number one. So it depends on what teams are bad. Like, if the Vikings continue to lose and the Vikings wind up with a high pick, do they take him? Do they trade out the pick? Do they trade out the pick to a team like Jacksonville and pick up Minshew and pick up some picks? I don't know. I'm just kicking the can around. Obviously, it's week three. But I'm just wondering, and I'm putting it out there, as a fan of football and as a fan of the man with the mustache, it would be a darn shame if, you know, this is the last shake he gets as a starter and then he winds up stuck on the bench somewhere forever. And that happens a lot. You know, I wonder why RG3 didn't get another look after coming back from the ACL, but I guess he's happy sitting behind Lamar and supporting him. I wonder why a guy like Mariota didn't potentially get another kick. I think Jameis Winston's going to get another kick after sitting in New Orleans. There's a lot of guys that get another shake. I'm just hoping that Gardner Minshew is one of them. Number five in the standout seven, two teams going in opposite directions. This is simply titled, Is Houston Bad? Is Arizona Good? I don't think Houston's bad. I just wanted to discuss this because Houston's sitting at 0-2, and they've got Pittsburgh this week because whoever made the schedules hates the Houston Texans. But it's worth noting, they end against the Titans, but before that, they have the Bengals, the Colts, which doesn't look like anything crazy right now. They have the Bears, the Colts again. This is in reverse order, obviously, from Week 16. The Lions, you know, they got a Browns game in there. They got, obviously, two Jaguars games in there. Their schedule's kind of hard, I'm not going to lie. And the brunt of it was the front of it. Wow, that rhymed. The Chiefs in Week 1 and the Ravens in Week 2. And they looked outclassed in this game, and it was kind of apparent. Down 20-10 at half, never realistically in this game. Deshaun, 275, a touchdown and a pick. The running game wasn't there. It was nice to see Randall Cobb out there again, but it just continues that, look, if this is Bill O'Brien's idea of building a wide receiving core, having Kenny Stills, who's a speed threat, Brandon Cooks, who's a speed threat, and Randall Cobb, who's another smaller receiver, to potentially, you know, pitch in the slot here and there, that's not how you do it. Look, I'm not saying I'm John Madden himself, nor am I even John Gruden, nor am I even Jay Gruden, nor am I even, you know, Jay Crawford, formerly of ESPN. Shout out to Jay Crawford. He's a nice guy. Connected with him on LinkedIn. He's a good dude. But I'm not none of those guys, but I'll tell you this. That's a lot of small dudes to build an offense around, and the tight end position for them, I've said it over and over again, Jordan Akins and Darren Fells, they don't impress me. So, look at the fact that Jimmy Graham was available in the offseason. They didn't go after him. You know, Greg Olsen, clearly available, wound up in Seattle. Obviously, it took some talking to get him into it, but here he is. Obviously, you know, chipping in that tip on the interception this past week that kind of put his team behind the eight ball, but we're not here to knock. This isn't about him yet. We're not talking about Greg, but my main point is they trade their best receiver and they just kind of say, okay, and now, you know, they got Cooks, who's a good player. Kenny Stills is a good player. Will Fuller is a good player. They're all the same player. They're all deep threats. And then Randall Cobb is just a slower, older, former slot receiver slash deep threat. This is not going to work against teams like the Ravens and the Chiefs. It's just not going to work. Look, it's... Maybe the offense goes through some changes. Maybe they play off of Watson's mobility a little more. I don't know what they could possibly do. This team is a decent team, a team that I still think could make the playoffs, but they're just not in the class of the Baltimore Ravens or the Chiefs. Not right now. Not as presently constituted. And I don't think we're going to see any trade deadline moves. This is Major League Baseball. This isn't the NBA. So I think you have a team that seems like it wasn't built to beat the best teams in its conference. I don't know what it was built to do. Evidently, I guess it was built well enough to keep Watson here and to free up room to re-sign Watson, but are they going to lean on their defense? The defense isn't as good as it used to be, and I think Bill O'Brien knows that, and if he doesn't, somebody should tell him because it's just the truth. I don't know. They're in that B tier pretty comfortably. Speaking on part two of this, the Arizona Cardinals are a pretty good team. Do I think the Arizona Cardinals are in the class of a team like the Packers or the Seahawks, and then even the B-tier with the Saints, who did not look great, and we'll talk about Monday Night Football, as always, to end the standout seven. Do I think so? I do not. I do not. The fact of the matter is, this team, I don't think Kenyon Drake is a great back, although I think he can pitch in, and we saw that against Washington. I think DeAndre Hopkins is an elite receiver. Andy Isabella's got burner speed, and he could chip in. Christian Kirk's got some good speed, he could chip in. Larry Fitzgerald is the X factor, and this sounds weird, right? Larry Fitzgerald is pushing towards the end, and we've known that for years. Larry Fitzgerald's one of the best playoff receivers I've ever seen in my life. So if this team were to find a way, which they could, they're already at 2-0, if they could find a way to make the playoffs, who's to say Larry Fitzgerald couldn't turn back the clock for one run and be 75% of what he used to be? If he could be 75% of what he used to be, then this team is scary. They've got some athleticism on the defensive end. Everybody knows Buda Baker. People remember Devon Kennard from Detroit. It didn't work out, but now he's moved on. Got a sack last week. Drake Kirkpatrick, who's a decent corner. People remember him from the Bengals. Pat Pete's still there. And then you have a guy like Isaiah Simmons, who they took high. Chandler Jones, who's a premier pass rusher. This team could be scary. But I think it hinges on finding that second threat in the passing game. If it's going to come down to Kenyon Drake and Kyler Murray doing their thing on the ground, their team is good. Do I think they're beat Seattle? Great. I don't. If Andy Isabella develops into one of those legit burner speed kind of guys, or possibly maybe some slot action, I don't know if that's possible for him. I don't know if he has the route running. I don't know if he has the hands. Then I'm on board. I think this team is good enough right now as they look to be a playoff contender. But to become a Super Bowl contender, I think it's going to take a step up from one of these other guys. Christian Kirk was pretty good before. You know, we've seen some flashes. Larry was all-time good. 7 catches for 50 yards this past weekend. You know, he's still there. He's still giving you all he got. I don't know if he has enough there athletically. Larry's a great route runner. He's got great hands. But I'm not sure. Is it all going to be on Murray, Drake, who's decent in the running game, and DeAndre Hopkins? If, you know, throw 3 guys at Hopkins and see what shakes loose in the other departments. Is Kyler going to have to scramble 10 times a game? He had 8 carries in this game. You know, is Kenyon Drake going to be able to consistently give you 4 yards a carry? Which, last game he did. I don't think, from what I saw, I mean, he was good in Miami. Pretty good. I wouldn't put him in the upper class of running backs in the NFL, but look, it's the NFL. Guys come and go that give you 4 yards a carry, apparently. Seems to be the way it's treated. Look, who thought Aaron Jones would be what he is? Who thought Alvin Kamara would be what he is? So it's quite possible that a guy like Kenyon Drake steps up for a couple years and, you know, maybe this is his big year. And if that's the case, then this team is scary. It really is. Number 6 in a standout 7, like usual. We're going to take it into the Sunday night football game. Oh my goodness, is Seattle's offense pretty darn good. I mean, we talked about it before when we were talking about MVP numbers. I mean, in this game alone, Russell Wilson, 21 of 28, 288, 5 touchdowns, and a pick. The pick was a tip pick that was a pretty good throw. Chris Carson, 72 yards on the ground. Russ scrambles for 40. Carlos Hyde chips in a handful of carries. DK Metcalf looks like a monster. Tyler Lockett still doing his thing. David Moore, who comes and goes, honestly. There's a lot of games where, hey, look, it's David Moore. He's pretty good. And a lot of games are like, David Moore play today? Chris Carson with a touchdown, also receiving. Freddie Swain, who? Exactly. Greg Olsen, 0 catches after the first attempt of the game, which was right at his face, and he knocked it right into the defense. Interesting in this one that we saw late in the game on the line, you know, we see that Cam Newton gets the ball in the big play, obviously, and it's just a straightforward run. Nothing insane. I thought it was a really lazy play call, if I'm being honest. I thought, I would say everyone in the stadium, but not everyone, you know, nobody's in the stadium. I thought it was quite lazy to just go, quarterback power, just run up the middle. Like, come on now, Josh, you're better than that. At least that's what everyone thinks. Everyone thinks you're a brilliant offensive mind, and look, hey, you and Tom made some magic, but that was, it was just ugly. Like I said before, Cam shut down on that. Seattle gifted him a touchdown early, so they win by 5, but they really could have won by 12. I think Seattle's better than New England, obviously, that came through in this game. Cam played pretty well. 30-44, 397. Can't complain about that. He was their leading rusher, which I thought was interesting. Julian Edelman played a great game. N'Keal Harry showed up, and I figure he's going to be a decent wideout for them. He's kind of inconsistent, but hopefully he gets there. Damir Bird, who, you know, honestly, I hadn't seen Damir Bird in a while. Wasn't even aware that he was on the roster. Damir Bird, a little bit of chemistry with Cam, one of the reasons they brought him in, you know, played 3 years in Carolina. I mean, the guy had a total of 12 catches, but I guess they practiced together. You know, he has 6 catches already this season. So, I'm sure he's gonna pass the 12 catch mark. Somebody will give you odds on that bet. The New England defense did not look good at all. The Seattle defense looked mediocre, if I'm being honest. I thought Jamal Adams made an impact a little bit. I mean, he had a sack. It was nothing crazy. Obviously, they're playing with heavy hearts, you know, the New England Patriots, rather, after what happened with James White and what happened with Bill Belichick's mother. It's a rough game for them, traveling cross-country. Nobody expected them to win this game. They put up a good fight. Not going to bash them too hard. I guess we have to throw in at the end of this, we already talked about Russell. Russell, like I said, is kind of transcending from a mobile QB who can throw, which is how a lot of people viewed him early on, and guys like Robert Griffin and guys like Lamar Jackson. And now it's kind of this new, you know, he's a QB who can run if he needs to. He's a Josh Allen. I'm a QB who can run. I'm not a mobile QB who can throw. You know, and it's that fine line that I would say a guy like Kyler Murray is walking, where, and there's nothing wrong with it, obviously. It's just the way the offense is structured. And the players' respective skill sets. But right now, I would say a guy like Kyler Murray is more in the mobile QB who can throw than a QB who happens to be able to run. You know what I mean? I would say Lamar Jackson is similar. He's in that mobile QB who can throw. And that has nothing to do with his, necessarily, with in terms of him, with his skill set, in terms of the offense is built, I would say, significantly around him running the ball. Like Cam Newton was in Carolina. He's a mobile QB who can throw. He's not a QB who's going to sit back there and I'll run if you give it to me. I'm going to look to run anytime. It's not only when, ooh, look, there's a lane. Josh Allen, scamper for 15 yards, scamper for 12 yards. It's not Daniel Jones, scamper off the side, you know, get 5 yards, ball out of bounds, and you're good. It's not Aaron Rodgers, I'll scamper for 10 yards. No, it's, okay, we're going to drop back. There's going to be at least 5 plays a game where it's going to be either read option or it's going to be a QB draw, like we saw with Newton here, or it's going to be a QB power, situations like that, and it's going to be, look, there's a hole in the line, doesn't matter what the read says, I'm taking off. And look, not always something wrong with that, but it's just the way it is. Number 7 in the standout 7, we'll group in Monday Night Football and Thursday Night Football. We're going to be honest here, Thursday Night Football, we're not giving you much of a shake. Jaguars, we talked about Minshew a little bit. Jaguars just not as good as Miami. That doesn't really say much. Miami's been a competitive team. They've been fighting, and shout out to them and Fitzmagic. I still think we're going to see Tua at a relatively midway point kind of part in this season. I think if we don't see him, it was kind of a failure of a season. They're not going anywhere. You might as well get Tua in there, get him some reps. Monday Night Football, interesting. Honestly, wasn't super interested in the game. It doesn't really say much to me that, oh, look, the Saints lost a road game. Yeah, that's what they do. I mean, it's week 2. Who cares? Vegas had this game mean more to them, and it was apparent. You know, home opener. Vegas is interesting to me as a team, and we'll talk about them as we get into the pick'em portion. If you want some stats, Drew Brees, 26-38, 312 and a pick. People are saying he's washed up. Is he washed up? Probably not. I mean, the fact of the matter is, when you talk about Drew Brees and Tom Brady are very similar. And they've been check-down monsters for years. Years with a capital S. You know, that's just the way they are. It's short passing. Drew more than Tom, and it's interesting the way I see it. Obviously, I'm not Trent Dilfer, I'm not Steve Young, but to me, Drew likes to open up into that rollout kind of post-action kind of game, intermediate, mid-range passing. Drew's got a good deep ball, not a great deep ball, I think. It's kind of a rainbow. You know, Russell Wilson's got a rainbow, too. Tom Brady likes to just put his foot in the ground and gun it when he's throwing it deep, and that's why you have a lot of those weird throws that just where the hell was that one going? I think they're predominantly short passers anyway. Short to intermediate, and there's nothing wrong with that. Rich Gannon did it to a Super Bowl. Tom Brady's done it to multiple Super Bowls. You know, it's just the way it is. Do I think he's over the hill? No. Do I still think the Saints are going to be a playoff team? Yeah. Do I still think the Saints are a top four team in the NFC? Yeah. Do I think they're better than Green Bay right now? No. Do I think they're better than Seattle right now? Hell no. And I think it depends on, in large part, the health of Mike Thomas. Speaking of Mike Thomas, because we have to shout him out here, Mike Thomas, when it's 10-0, says this could get ugly. His team proceeds to get stomped 34-14 from that point. They're tied at halftime. They lose the second half 17-7. Yeah, no, don't. Why? Why poke the bear? Not a bad game from Kamara. Actually, a pretty darn good one. 22 touches for, what, a little over $170? Call it $174. Thought the interesting thing is it shows you that without Michael Thomas, this offense just really isn't the same, and that's kind of Captain Obvious, but there's some offenses where without the number one, you could see them still have a decent game. Remember when Antonio Brown was in Pittsburgh? You'd see Antonio Brown not here from game to game. You know, the late game, I believe it was his last game in Pittsburgh, when he just didn't suit up and they still had a chance, and they put up a good fight in that game. They just wound up coming up short. You see that Tre'Quan Smith is a decent wideout, but he's nowhere near, in my opinion, number two. Deontre Harris, same. He's a gimmick, kind of speedy kind of guy. Emmanuel Sanders is talented, but he hasn't worked his way into this offense as well. And at this point in his career, is he better as a number two or as a depth guy? It depends. Jared Cook, who they probably needed to step up in this one, only two catches. You look at the other end, and it's the more intriguing one. Derek Carr, 28-38. Remember, I said he's got to have a big year. I put him on notice along with Matt Stafford, along with a couple of the other guys. Three tutties in this one. In the first home game in Vegas for Derek Carr, Josh Jacobs continues to perform. Darren Waller trying to show the world it wasn't a fluke that he had a great year last year. Couple snags from Hunter Renfrow, who I liked at Clemson, and Brian Edwards chipping in. Foster Moreau, the other tight end, chipping in. A catch from Nelson Agholor as Eagle fans groan everywhere. Henry Ruggs, unfortunately, only one catch in this one. And then we have the news, I believe, here that Henry Ruggs will not be playing this week against the Patriots. Same with George Kittle, even though he practiced all week. Nick Mullins going to go for the 49ers. And then obviously we have Jaguars news, Leon Jacobs, talented linebacker, tore his ACL, and will miss the rest of the season. Just rolling through some little news and notes here before we finish this off. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Without Ruggs, who obviously didn't do much in this game because, you know, injuries and such, same injury he's had since week one. They beat the Saints at home. For the Saints, it's not huge. For Vegas, I'm impressed. Genuinely. I'm genuinely impressed by this game. I'm not going to lie to you. I was not expecting this win, and I thought they played pretty darn well. Like I said, it wasn't on the front burner for me. It's a week two road game for the Saints. But, and we know they play worse on the road, which is interesting because there's no fans, so why are you playing any better at home than on the road? Whatever. It's all mental, I guess. It's just the way it is. But either way, kudos to the Raiders and meh on the New Orleans Saints. Just some more news and notes here. There were mask fines for, I believe, 5 head coaches. $100,000 apiece, and we talked about this, I think, a little bit last week, and if not, I'll bring it up now. I think it's kind of silly, I'll be honest with you. I know it's for the safety of the head coaches, and I respect that, and I assume that the coaches' families and everyone appreciates that, but every player was tested and they're clean. Every coach, presumably, as they've said, was tested and they're clean. I think there were 2 players and 5 personnel in the entire league this week that tested dirty. Not for steroids or anything, but for the coronavirus, and hopefully they get well. But I think it's kind of odd if everyone's clean and we're in a situation where we're in a vacuum, we're in a bubble. Why are you wearing the masks? The players don't have to wear masks, and there's more of them than there are. Okay, and they're all over each other, and they don't have to wear masks. Okay, is the face mask on the helmet supposed to stop it? You don't believe that. And you see it, you know, in the NBA. The coaches wearing masks, and there's a weird socially distanced interviews. They bother me tremendously as someone that hopes that one day somebody would care enough to give me that job. You know, you're 6 feet away. Why do you have the mascot. I thought the distancing was supposed to... Okay. All right. And they have the boom mic. Why don't you just hand the person the microphone? Instead of this obnoxious boom mic on the stick, why don't you just hand them the mic? I know for rule number one, don't hand the person the mic. Circumstances are a little different, no? Okay. Whatever. Just want to put it out there. $100,000 fine each. $250,000 fine for the team. Whatever. Who cares? Giants signed Devontae Freeman. We'll talk about that. Obviously, big injury we didn't really mention. Best of luck to Saquon Barkley, who tore his ACL. Giants were going to be bad. Now they're just going to be worse. Solomon Thomas tears his ACL for San Francisco. Jimmy G with a high ankle, a maybe for week three. Nick Bosa tears his ACL. Bruce Irvin tears his ACL for Seattle. I predicted 5 ACL injuries in week one. Lo and behold, here we are, week two. We get about 7 of them. Tevin Coleman not going to play in week three for San Francisco. They talked about potential MetLife turf issues. They played there in week one, Pittsburgh and the Giants, no problem. Week two, San Francisco complains. The NFL and the NFLPA send out an investigation. Said the field is fine. Interesting. Okay. Kind of odd. Just before we get into the picks portion, I thought this one was interesting. There was an article in The Athletic discussing who you'd rather have right now, Jared Goff or Carson Wentz. And honestly, I'm not sure. My snap instinct, you know, would have been Carson Wentz. I'm a big fan of Carson Wentz. And I thought that his MVP season, he looked like he was taking off and he was going to be a phenomenal QB. You take a look at career stats, and, I mean, it's comparable. 58 career games for Wentz. He's 32-26, 14,703 yards, 99 touchdowns, 39 picks. 56 career games for Jared Goff, 35-21, so he's got a better record. Completion percentage, 62.6, just a little under. He's got more yards, though. 14,761, 90 touchdowns to 43 picks. Slightly less touchdowns, slightly more picks. Better win percentage. He's been on better teams. You can make the argument. Although, Jared Goff, in 3 seasons since his rookie year, has not had a losing campaign. 11-4 in starts in 17, 13-3 in starts in 18, 9-7 last year in a down year where his pass attempts were up. His attempts were up, his yardage was down, his picks were up, and his touchdowns were down. As the team just wasn't good, we talked about that over and over. Obviously, Carson Wentz is a pretty darn good player if he could stay on the field. Wentz's last 3 seasons, 33 touchdowns, 7 picks, 21 touchdowns, 7 picks, 27 touchdowns, 7 picks. He's already got 4 through 2 games, so I'd say it's worth betting that he will top 7 interceptions this season. Gun to my head, the next 5 years. Obviously, Wentz, 28 years of age, Jared Goff, 26 years of age. The 2-year difference is interesting. I think they're both pretty mobile. I'd say the better mobility goes to Wentz if he could stay on the field. If we're playing Madden football, injuries off, I'm taking Carson Wentz every day of the week. It's hard for me, though. You know, like I said, gun to my head, build my franchise for the next 5 years. The injuries scare me for Wentz. They really do. They concern me. And he's having a little bit of a down year here, just through 2 games. It'd be hard for me not to say Wentz. I really do. I think Goff had a lot around him in Gurley, and he had a lot of threats, including Brandon Cooks when they brought him in. I like Cooper Kupp a lot. Robert Woods is a solid number 2. They get some production out of that tight end position. Not to say that Philly didn't have a decent amount around Wentz as well, but I think Carson Wentz on the Rams playing about as well. Jared Goff on the Eagles maybe wouldn't have played as well. Give me Wentz. Just a quick one before we get into the pick'em portion of this week's episode. And we're going to start with a former NFC Championship matchup, which I'm pretty sure has happened about 3 times at this point. San Francisco 49ers in New Jersey to take on the New York Giants. Now, as we mentioned, a litany of injuries for the Niners. Jimmy G not going to play in this one. Nick Mullins going to be the QB. We said Kittle was out. Dee Ford is also out. Dre Greenlaw out with a quad. Dee Ford with a back. Raheem Mostert, their lead back, out with a knee. Tevin Coleman, their second back, out with a knee. For the Giants, nothing big. Obviously, minus Saquon Barkley. Sterling Shepard to IR as well. So we're looking at essentially the 49ers bench against a New York Giants amalgamation of ones and twos. Now, The Niners still have Jerick McKinnon. They still have some talented players on that team in that secondary. This is easily a trap. I picked the Giants last week, and they lose at the buzzer, because of course they do. There's a play late in the game on fourth down where it gets batted in the air, and a Bears lineman catches the ball for a first down, which is the most New York Giants thing that's ever happened. If it's not New York Giants, then it's Cleveland Browns. I'm going to trap myself again here. I'm going to pick the New York Giants. There's no way, right? They're going to go 0-3, especially when their third game is against a team that doesn't have a starting quarterback, a starting running back, starting DNs, two starting running backs. Two of their, Deebo Samuel not going to play either. There's so many injuries. They are, oh my goodness, no. Give me the Giants. If they lose this one, which look, my initial pick was the Niners. If they lose this one, it's going to be hilarious. Give me the Giants to make me laugh. Next, we have Washington heading to Cleveland to take on the Cleveland Browns, also in the 1 o'clock slate. Cleveland's just better than Washington. This is a classic Browns find a way to lose. But in this case, I'm going to take the Browns. Keep it simple. Keep it short and sweet as we push upon the 1 hour mark of episode 83. Next, we have one of the more intriguing ones that we teased earlier. The Cincinnati Bengals head to Philly to take on the aforementioned slumping Philadelphia Eagles. Oof, before we move on, real quick, let's talk about those injuries from the Browns game. Sorry. The Cleveland Browns going to be without Olivier Vernon in this one, something the New York Giants fans have heard quite a bit. He's on the D-line, of course. Jacob Phillips in the linebacking core with a knee, and Greedy Williams in the secondary with a shoulder. Interesting to note, Denzel Ward also questionable with a groin in the secondary. Adrian Claiborne also questionable on the D-line with a hip. And the Washington football team going to be without linebacker Cole Holcomb with a knee, tackle Sadiq Charles with a thigh, and they're also going to have two questionable, Steven Sims Jr., wide receiver with a toe, and tackle Moses with a hip. Now let's get into this Bengals game. This one is intriguing for several reasons. Because we saw, and if maybe not we, maybe me, Doug Peterson kind of lash out a little bit, initially asked what's going on with the regression of Carson Wentz. It seems like he's missing some easy throws here. And they ask him about it, and he proceeds to just say, you know, I wish I knew. And then when he's asked about something similar later in the week, he kind of lashes out at the reporter, says, have you ever played football in the NFL, son? There's no layups out there. There are no easy throws, which is totally bogus. Like, that's just not true. Every job has things that are easy. Obviously, they're easy throws. We can rip Dak Prescott from here to kingdom come for underthrowing checkdowns. But, you know, Dak Prescott right now is a better quarterback than Carson Wentz, and that's hands down. To say that there's no easy throws would just be a lie. You're just wrong. Like, no. I refuse to believe that. Even if it's subjective. The word easy is a subjective assessment. You know what I mean? A grown person, a grown human being could get 10 addition problems and they're the easiest thing in the world, right? 2 plus 2, 7 plus 4. You give that to a little kid and it's like, whoa, hold on, I gotta bust out my fingers here. Some of these are hard. We gotta carry numbers when we're doing subtraction. That could be hard to them, but that's subjectively easy. Look, if a throw looks easy to a guy sitting on his couch, he might be wrong. But you're Doug Peterson. You know which throws are easy. I know you don't want to throw your QB under the bus, but you don't gotta do that. You ever play QB in the league, son? Shut up. Shut up and help your team be better. Speaking of being better, do I think they're going to win this week at home? Well, the injuries say that the Bengals are going to be without D-tackle Geno Atkins, one of the leaders on their defense. Safety Sean Williams questionable with a calf, and D-tackle Mike Daniels questionable with a groin. The Eagles are going to be without Alshon Jeffrey with a foot injury, and Jalen Reagor with a thumb. I've heard it as Reagor. I've heard it as Reagor. It's spelled like Reagan, so I can understand where they come with that. But I've also seen people say, well, I'll go with Reagor. Keep it simple. They'll also be without cornerback Rudy Ford with the groin. Fletcher Cox, the leader on their defense, is questionable with an abdomen injury. Now, this Bengals team is interesting because they found a way to fight in week one and pull a defeat from the jaws of victory. And then they found a way in week two to, you know, kind of on the scoreboard, stay competitive by the end of the game. I feel like this is a game that Philly needs because they know they're not trying to go 0-3. They're not trying to wind up in that situation. But I'm going to take the Bengals. I liked some of the stuff that I've seen from them. I think Philly was better in spurts in week two than they were in week one. I mean, we take a look at the fact that, I mean, it's just hard for me to believe they still lost. They lost to Washington in a game they were winning. They got shut out in the second half. They're better than that team. They're better than the team that loses by 18 at home to the Rams. By the way, what are, we're talking about softball starts. We talked about how the schedule makers hate the Texans. They start in Washington, then at home to the Rams that nobody thought would be any decent. I mean, maybe a decent team, but not a contender. And right now the Rams look great. And then they have the Bengals. And then after those three, they wind up with 49ers, Steelers, Ravens. Oh, look, you better get in gear this week, because if you don't get in gear this week, it's going to be a weird one. I'm going to take the Bengals. I'm very tentative. In fact, I'm not confident in this pick. But I was fairly confident the Eagles would put up some sort of a fight last week, and they didn't, even though I picked the Rams. So give me the Bengals. Let's pick against the Eagles again and see what they do. Our next matchup is a classic rematch of the Tuck Rule game. The Las Vegas Raiders head to New England to take on the Patriots. The Raiders going to be without tackle Trent Brown with a calf, linebacker Nick Kwiatkowski with a pectoral, and the aforementioned first-round receiver Henry Ruggs with a knee/hamstring. Questionable and big injuries in this one for them, however. Darren Waller battling a knee and Josh Jacobs battling a hip. That's their two best weapons on their offense. That's big. Obviously, the Patriots still going to be out without James White, as we send our condolences his way. Car crash, leaving his family kind of in a odd spot. So we hope the best for him, and we send our condolences his way because of the car crash involving his parents. They're going to be without David Andrews, their center with a hand, and Julian Edelman, N'Keal Harry, both questionable out at the receiver position. Obviously, this could just be Bill Belichick doing Bill Belichick things. I'm going to take the Raiders. This feels like a game where, look, especially if one of those two, if Julian Edelman doesn't play, then I'm very confident. I think Edelman winds up playing in this one, and I'd hope for the Raiders' sake that Jacobs and Waller both end up playing to keep their momentum. The Raiders have impressed. They've looked pretty darn good, and Derek Carr is coming off a game that he looked like Derek Carr when he was an MVP candidate, throwing three touchdowns against a pretty decent Saints defense here. I think the Raiders go on the road and try and keep the momentum. Give me Las Vegas to avenge the loss of Oakland oh so long ago. Next, we got a battle of two weird teams that I feel like don't face off too often. Well, I guess every handful of years. The Chicago Bears head to Atlanta to take on the Falcons. For this one, no one out, only questionables for the Bears. Khalil Mack with a knee and DN Mario Edwards with a glute. For the Falcons, Julio Jones questionable with a hamstring. Dante Fowler Jr. questionable with an ankle. Tech McKinley questionable with a groin. Big injuries. Big injuries. Two along the defensive front, and obviously Julio Jones, the best player on this team, easily. This Bears team, they're not that good. They're really not. And this Falcons team, it's pretty mediocre. So this is a matchup of two teams that aren't going to matter in a couple months, in my opinion. I think the Bears right now somehow are sitting at 2-0, and that just doesn't feel right. So I'm going to pick the Falcons in this one. They put up a decent fight in week one against a team that's clearly better than them. They should have won last week. There's only two ways this go down. Either they come out flat and they lose this game pretty easily, or they come out pissed off, fighting for their head coach and fighting for their future, and they win this one at home. I think it'll be the latter. Give me the Falcons at home. Next, we have one of the more intriguing matchups of the weekend as the LA Rams head east to take on the Buffalo Bills. I say intriguing because the Rams, I think, are playing above their weight class here and taking on the Bills. They're at 2-0. Bills are at 2-0. Rams without rookie running back Cam Akers and corner Darius Williams questionable with an ankle. The Bills going to be without running back Zach Moss with a toe and tight end Dawson Knox with a concussion. Questionable linebacker Tremaine Edmonds with a shoulder, athletic linebacker. Linebacker Matt Milano with a hamstring and corner Taron Johnson with a groin. I would say pretty confidently the Bills are the better team in this matchup, and I don't think they'll be able, and they being the Rams, I don't think the Rams will be able to force turnovers like they did just a week ago to bring home that win, and I don't think they're as good as Buffalo. I think right now Buffalo is one of the best teams in the AFC. Are they on the level of the Chiefs or the Ravens? I wouldn't be confident in saying that. But at the same time, I might put them obviously in that same class as the Texans. Give me Buffalo to hold serve and win at home. Speaking of the Texans, we have another one of the good matchups this week as the Houston Texans head to Pittsburgh to take on Big Ben and the Steelers. This one's odd, as I said. Pittsburgh, nobody listed here on the NFL.com injury report. Houston Texans, however, going to have a couple of guys listed here. Kenny Stills, questionable with an illness. Duke Johnson with an ankle. And Peter Kalambayi, linebacker, with a hamstring. I think Pittsburgh right now is better than the Texans. I do. That being said, I don't think Houston is a bad enough team to be sitting at 0-3. And that sounds silly. That sounds foolish. That's really just more of a thing that has to do with scheduling than anything else. So I think Deshaun Watson's going to go out there and try to find a way to grit it out. I think, as weird as it sounds, there's a little bit of a parallel I see sometimes in the way Deshaun plays and Big Ben plays in terms of just running through things and playing through certain injuries. It's not one-to-one, obviously, but it does look like, to a certain extent, for me, there's a little bit of a parallel. I think the Texans go on the road and win this one. I think Pittsburgh is good. I think their defense is great. But, I mean, they got the Giants in Week 1, Pittsburgh in Week 2. I'm trying to remember who they played. I think they played the Broncos with a backup quarterback after Locke gets hurt. Haven't really been tested yet at all this year. Give me Houston on the road. Next, we have a weird one. The Tennessee Titans head to Minnesota to take on the Vikings, our final 1 o'clock kick. The Titans going to be without wide receiver A.J. Brown, which is big, without corner Chris Jackson, without linebacker Derek Roberson. The Vikings without corner Cameron Dantzler and corner Mike Hughes. Questionable, another corner, Chris Boyd with a hammy, and Mike Boone with a concussion. This Vikings team is just not good. They're just not. And I'm, look, they're going to go out, and they're probably going to play well because I'm not picking them. That's just the way the Vikings do it. You know, it's just the way it is. But with that being said, I'm not picking them. I can't do it. I refuse to pick them in this matchup. I will take Tennessee, even without their number one wideout. Give me Derrick Henry in this one. It's going to be maybe a hard-nosed game. Derrick Henry goes for $120. Dalvin Cook goes for $150 all-purpose. Could I see the Vikings winning? Yes. Have I been impressed with Ryan Tannehill like I was last year? Not really. But it is what it is. Give me Tennessee until the Vikings show me a little bit of life. Next, our first of two 405 kicks, and there are three 425 kicks. A little more balanced this week in the scheduling department. The Carolina Panthers head to L.A. to take on the Chargers, led by Justin Herbert. Panthers, doubtful, D-tackle Kawan Short, guard Dennis Daly, questionable tackle Russell Okung, former Pro Bowler for the Seahawks. Chargers going to be without, obviously, quarterback Tyrod Taylor. Wish him a speedy recovery. Doubtful running back Justin Jackson and linebacker Melvin Ingram, which is a big one, and linebacker Nick Vigil. Questionable tackle Brian Bulaga and guard Trey Turner. So that's a lot of big injuries for this Chargers team. Carolina has been textbook decent after a couple of weeks, I would say. Teddy Bridge, not great last week. They wind up losing the game to the Bucs. They lose a close one to the Raiders after a weird play call where they don't give it to McCaffrey on a 4th and short. I liked what I saw from Justin Herbert last week. The injuries don't scare me as much. If he was able to play that well against a Chiefs defense that I respect more than this defense, then I think Justin Herbert's going to have a pretty good day. I think Austin Eckler's going to have a pretty good day. Josh Kelly, let's see how Hunter Henry performs. Let's see how Mike Williams and Keenan Allen perform against a little bit of an easier time, a defense not being run by Steve Spagnuolo, who's a time and time again Super Bowl champion. Let's give me the Chargers to win this one at home, the first win in the career of Justin Herbert. Next, our other 405 kick, and don't drop that remote. It's going to be interesting. Jets at Colts. Oh boy. Jets without wide receiver Jamison Crowder with a hammy. Breshad Perriman with an ankle. Tackle George Fant with a concussion. And two in the secondary, Quincy Wilson and Ashton Davis. They also have another wide receiver, Braxton Berrios, questionable with a hammy. DB Nate Harrison, another one, questionable with a hip. Connor McGovern on the O-line with a hammy. The Colts going to be without Rakia Sin, who's just listed as illness. And Jack Doyle, questionable with a knee/ankle. I imagine Jack will go. He usually does. I'm taking the Colts in this one. The Jets have shown not much at all through 2 weeks. They played a banged-up Niner team with a backup quarterback in for part of the game, and they still lost by 2 scores. Give me the Colts. The Colts are at home. It is what it is. Next, in the 425 window, we're getting spicy with it. The Dallas Cowboys head to Seattle to take on the Seattle Seahawks. Dallas going to be without cornerback Chidobe Awuzie with a hamstring. Questionable DN DeMarcus Lawrence with a knee and Tyron Smith with a neck. Those are two big ones on either side of the ball on the line. Seahawks going to be without DN Rasheem Green with a neck. Questionable Quinton Dunbar, who had a pick last week in the secondary, with a knee. Nico Thorpe with a hip. Tackle Cedric Ogbui. Every week we got to do this. Hope he gets healthy so he gets off the injury report so we don't have to keep struggling with Ogbui's name. Ogboy? Well, who knows? With a pectoral and Benson Maioa with a groin. I'm going to take Seattle in this one. I think Dallas has got momentum, but I think to say that they won that game solely by their own volition is a lie, just to say, like, the Patriots won that Super Bowl against the Falcons solely of their own volition is a lie. It's a two-part thing. They choked that one away. You know, this is the same one of two ways. I think they're going to come out hot, but I think Seattle's just flat out better than them. Seattle's defense was mediocre last week, like I said, which gives me a little cause to pause because this offense obviously has Zeke Elliott, who gets his against every team he plays against. I think Russ is playing the best he's ever played football, and when he's playing like that, I can't pick against him. Give me Russ and the Seahawks to hold serve. Next, the Detroit Lions head to Arizona to take on the Cardinals. Two teams heading in different directions, to say the least. Detroit going to be without tight end Hunter Bryant in this one. Doubtful defensive back Desmond Trufant with a hamstring, as NFL.com has him listed as Demsend. That's okay. Weird little typo. Questionable Kenny Golladay with a hammy. Kenny Golladay is a big one for me. If Golladay goes, this team's a completely different offense. He hasn't gone yet. It'd be hard for me to assume he goes in this one. Cardinals without Christian Kirk and Mason Cole on the O-line with a hammy. Questionable corner Drake Kirkpatrick with a neck. Jordan Phillips with an ankle. This is a game that I could see being relatively high scoring. I'm not super confident in the Arizona defense, nor am I confident in the Detroit defense. This is a classic trap game for me where I wind up picking Detroit because I think Golladay. Because I think Golladay is going to play, but at the end of the day, he probably doesn't. However, do I think Arizona's good enough to keep up this momentum, to keep this run going? I'm not sure. I think Detroit is playing better than they are, and I'm going to pick Detroit for one reason. This is a make-or-break game for them. I think if they lose this game, this season is going to spiral. And I think if the season spirals, then obviously Matt Patricia's gone, as we talked about earlier. I'm picking Detroit because I think there's a little bit of fight left in there. Let's see if it's true. I don't know. If Golladay goes, I'd be a lot more confident in this pick. We'll find out tomorrow if he is, in fact, going to go. Final 425 kick, the Bucs against the Broncos. This one, we just got to get through the injuries, and then I'll give you the pick. Buccaneers without wide receiver Justin Watson with a shoulder, who chipped in a little last week. Broncos without quarterback Drew Locke with a shoulder. Doubtful, Philip Lindsay with a toe. Questionable, Jerry Jeudy with ribs. I'm not taking Denver when their best running back is doubtful, their quarterback is out, and their best receiver, arguably, is questionable. That's just not happening. Moreover, we have, you know, the Courtland Sutton injury done for the year with an ACL. I am not taking Denver. Any chance of that Denver pick I had at the beginning of the year coming true is pretty much out the window. So give me the Bucks. Give me almost anyone against Denver in the next few weeks. Just the way it is. Sunday night, we have the Packers against the Saints. Packers, doubtful Devontae Adams. Tight end, Josiah DeGuara, also doubtful, which is an interesting one because DeGuara's been getting a decent amount of targets for a tight end that, you know, not too many people know about, a guy that's kind of seemed like he'd be a depth guy, at least from my perception, but he's walking in here, and every time I turn it on, he's got a couple of snags. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy, but him and Rodgers seem to have a pretty good relationship. Next, questionable D-lineman Kenny Clark with a groin. Darnell Savage, one of the best names in the sport, at safety with a groin. Guard Elgton Jenkins with a back and rib. Michael Thomas still out for the Saints. Questionable, DN Marcus Davenport, DN Trey Hendrickson, D-tackle David Onyemata, and running back former Packer Ty Montgomery with a hamstring. This one's hard for me. The Saints are at home, but without Mike Thomas, they're coming off a game where they underachieved. They've heard a lot this week about how Drew Brees looks over the hill and all those things. But at the end of the day, talent usually wins out, and I think the Packers are just the more talented squad. Give me Green Bay to walk into the Superdome and make a statement, say, look, we're right up here with Seattle. We'll see you soon, New Orleans. We'll see you in the playoffs and win this one. Next, but not last, our last of week three, the biggest game. We got two phenomenal games. Look, come on now. Sunday night, Packers-Saints, which could be the championship game. Monday night, Chiefs at Ravens, which could also be the championship game. That is a wonderful matchup. And it's in Baltimore. I think the Chiefs are coming off probably the worst game they've played in a minute. This Chiefs team is going to want to show that they're better than they just showed in LA. And I think that they are better than that team. No question in my mind. At the same time, with Baltimore at home, the running game, Baltimore has looked pretty good, and pretty good's an understatement through the first 2 weeks. They beat up on the Browns. They beat up on the Texans. They've got all the momentum. They're playing at home. It's going to be hard for me to not pick Baltimore in this one, but that's exactly what I'm going to do. I think this Chiefs team is really good. I do. I could see Baltimore winning this one. I think the smart money would say Baltimore is favored. I would say Vegas is right in that assumption with Baltimore being at home. But, look, there's only so many times you can say, well, they're the better team, but it's early in the season and they're on the road. Sometimes a better team just wins these games no matter what, just to put the league on notice. Same thing I said with the Packers applies to the Chiefs here, although I'm more confident in the Packers pick. Give me the Chiefs, my preseason Super Bowl pick to win on the road. Week four, Thursday night football. The Denver Broncos head to New Jersey to take on the Jets. This sounds horrible. I do not want to watch this. I do not want to watch this at all. I just said I'm not picking this Broncos team. They're without their top wideout and their quarterback and their running back, potentially. But somehow that team was moderately competitive against Pittsburgh with all those things against them. The Jets can't be this bad, right? Like, they can't lose to Denver on short rest on Thursday night. I'm going to take the Jets. I'm never confident in picking the Jets. I'm even less confident in this one because this feels like a very Jets thing to do, to lose this game, to put Adam Gase's hot seat on fire and guarantee that he will not be the coach of this team next year. I would go so far as to say that if the Broncos win this game, the odds of him being fired before the end of the season should probably go through the roof. They can't lose this game, right? Right? Give me the Jets. Why not? All right, folks, that brings us to the end of episode 83 of the Necessary Roughness podcast. Hope you all enjoyed, and I hope to hear from you, see you, speak to you. Don't know what the right word to put there is. Hope that you'll be joining us again next Saturday afternoon for episode 84 as we break down week three, and hopefully not that Jets loss on Thursday night. Although it would be funny, I'm not going to lie to you. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.